वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट 20 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेनांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद इथं व्रजन् भारतमेव वर्षम् कालेन यावद् गतवान् प्रभासम् तावच्च शास क्षितिमेकचक्राम् एकातपत्रामजितेन पार्थः इथं व्रजन् भारतमेव वर्षम् कालेन यावत् गतवान् प्रभासम् तावच्च शास क्षितिम् एकचक्रम् एकातपत्रामजितेन पार्थः Translation. This is referring to Vidura. Thus, when he, Vidura, was in the land of Bharatavarsha, traveling to all the places of pilgrimage, he visited Prabhasa Kshetra. At that time, Maharaj Yudhishthira was the emperor and held the world under one military strength and one flag. Purport. More than 5,000 years ago, while Saint Vidura was traveling the earth as a pilgrim, India was known as Bharatavarsha, as it is known even today. The history of the world cannot give any systematic account for more than 3,000 years into the past. But before that, the whole world was under the flag and military strength of Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was the emperor of the world. At present, there are hundreds and thousands of flags flapping in the United Nations. But during the time of Vidura, there was, by the grace of Ajit, Lord Krishna, only one flag. The nations of the world are very eager to again have one state under one flag, but for this they must seek the favor of Lord Krishna, who alone can help us become one worldwide nation. This verse is about Vidura. Having traveled all over Bharatavarsha, he comes to Prabhas, which was a holy place. Now that holy place is mostly considered a holy place in connection with Krishna's disappearing from the world at that place, but it was a holy place even before. And many thousands of years ago, there's a continuity in what we may call Indian culture, which goes back hundreds and thousands and millions of years, although, as Srila Prabhupada notes here, the history of the world as presently accepted among what are considered orthodox scholars only goes back about 3,000 years, so that they think they have systematic knowledge from then onward. But the Vedic conception is quite different. It goes back millions of years, and there are so many places of Ramachandra's pastimes going back millions of years. So many places here in India. We can think of Ayodhya, it's very famous, Rameshwaram, Chitrakoot, Prayag, he also went there. Then Janakpur, which is now in Nepal officially, just over the border. Sitamari is the birthplace of Sita. Nasik is a place of Lord Ram's. And here in Andhra Pradesh, there's a rival to Nasik somewhere. So also Panchavati, there's a place where the rival in the sense they say that's where actually the nose cutting took place. So we don't want to stir up any trouble here between the Telugu bhaktas of Lord Ram and the Marathi bhaktas of Lord Ram, but said to have, maybe also because maybe in different eras the Lord comes again and again. So from this we get sacred geography. Paramarthik Bhugol was an article that appeared sometimes in the Gauriya magazine of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You can all understand what that means, except yourself probably. Paramarthik means spiritual and Bhugol means geography. So that's a disadvantage of Tamil. You don't know common Sanskrit words in many cases. Whereas those who are raised with most Indian languages, except Tamil, Urdu is also an Indian language. Indian English is also an Indian language, and there are some. Well, it's an official language, right? It's used in the courts and the parliament and everything. And there are some languages from the Burmese family, which are used up in the northeast, and tribal languages. But most Indian languages are derived from Sanskrit. So spiritual geography, and that is a great pride of India, or should be, that this culture goes back and back and back and back. Now, of course, India is very much influenced by the Western world in so many ways. But it should be a great pride for India that it has such an ancient and advanced culture. People, or anthropologists, they think of advanced culture that if people have town planning and highly advanced language, but actually that was there also, as is seen in the, for instance, the Harappa archaeological digs, that they had town planning. Not the highest standard of human civilization. The highest level of human civilization is to go away from civilization and go to the forest and search for God. The highest level of civilization is to not be interested in civilization. But materialistic people, they think that to develop human society so that we can live very comfortably, that is the highest level. But they're so foolish, they don't consider that so many people lived so comfortably in so many civilizations, and then they all died. So what was the point of it all? But Indian civilization, the highest point of it, it has a wide spectrum. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, from sense gratification, which is not very high at all, in fact it's just on the same level as the animals, but right up to self-realization. And in fact that culture is meant to lead one from the animal platform to the platform beyond birth and death. So that should be a great point of pride. Of course, to be proud of one's country is some foolishness, because it's not really our own country. But if at all that tendency is there, then it is usefully applied to India. If one thinks, I am born in a country where self-realization is the, or has been the essence of the culture for thousands and millions of years, therefore I should also pursue self-realization. That is favorable for becoming self-realized, which is the ultimate goal of life. But if one thinks, well, I'm born in America, and America is dedicated to sense gratification, so therefore I should pursue more sense gratification and be a real American, well, that's not at all helpful for pursuing the goal of life. So actually this country is very important, as is stated in Shastra. People are born in different situations according to their previous desires and their previous activities, and persons who are fit for making spiritual advancement, generally they take birth in this country because the culture is suitable for that. It's clearly becoming less and less suitable every day, but as the rest of the world is also clearly becoming more and more degraded still, India's ahead in that sense. There's some kind of culture of Krishna consciousness is there. So that's something that people in India can be cognizant of. Srila Prabhupada often said that Indians, under the guidance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bharata Bhumite Hoilo Manusha Janma Jadanma Shata Kari Kara Para Upaka, Indians, those who are born as humans in the land of India, they should make their life successful by Krishna consciousness and try to benefit the whole world by spreading this spiritual culture. India is known throughout the world for her spiritual culture. Many people recognize that India has a great spiritual culture, but probably the image of India is more, not one that would conjure up pride, but more of shame. That's partly because of deliberate propaganda against India, which in that book, which is in the bookshelf there, Breaking India, is given an overview, well, more an overview, it's quite some detail. You were asking about books that, for rounding out the education, secular books, that's one. That Breaking India, to know what's going on, how different external forces, that means governments of the Western countries, not maybe not directly the governments, more like the CIA and all that kind of thing. Christians and communists. Although they all have very different agendas, but they in India they are united. Oh, and Islamicists. They all have the agenda to undermine India's culture and replace it with their own idea of what they want to do. So undermine means, just like in the English press, you'll see that there's it's changed actually now. The BJP's come into power because they're much more. They used to be very anti-BJP, but they're more cautious now. they're a bunch of prostitutes, these journalists. They're not interested in giving the truth. They're paid. They're servants of money, like everyone else. So, yeah, through the press and through deliberately undermining and infiltrating institutions, there's an instance there given of some Christian who joined an Indian dance school, and then she became the principal of the school, and then the first thing she did was to remove the deity of Ganesh, before whom all the dancers, they have to, first of all, you have to offer obeisance to Ganesh. And they said, no, this is secular, nothing to do with any religion. So they want to take the, in so many instances. Anyway, but in the West, people mostly think of India in terms of communal violence, in terms of the caste, and now in terms, recently, in terms of rape, as if there's no rape in any other country. And oppression of women, and undoubtedly India has social problems, but undoubtedly every country has. But actually India should take cognizance of all this and become a country that others can look up to. In accounts of India given by visitors from overseas, many of them marveled at how pious the people were, how of good character people were. But that's not there now. Good character is not normal. Corruption is normal. It's just part of the fabric of Indian life. This one political party came up on the promise of rooting out corruption, but it didn't get very far. And there doesn't seem to be any... There are little bits here and there. Recently, the chief minister of Tamil Nadu was given a 4-year jail sentence for corruption. But why? I wonder, why only 4 years? It's a serious crime, having looted the country of thousands of crores of rupees. But not say that too loud, because she'll be out after some time. But it took almost 20 years to get her. In the meantime, she had already looted more hundreds and thousands of crores. So why should Indians tolerate this at all? There's so many movements. Now the Prime Minister started this Swachh Bharat Abhiyan, the Clean India movement. But why anyway should there be a cult? Why in a culture, such a high culture, should the culture be that you just throw garbage everywhere and you there's all piles of garbage in the street? Didn't anyone notice up until now? Did they have to kind of, had to wait till 2013 for someone to notice it and do something about it? Where is the India of Yudhishthira? Where is the India of Rama? That India should be showing the best example in all respects. It's not enough to simply talk very high philosophy and then live in a garbage heap. Actually, before we speak any philosophy, we should have a cleaning. Srila Prabhupada said that in Mayapur. He said the first thing in the morning is cleaning. That's the culture, actually. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but in the early morning, before sunrise, the women will be up, in traditional culture, sweeping the courtyard and putting rangoli before sunrise. Rangoli has to be done before sunrise. That's the culture. That's the proper culture. So that's the first thing. So Srila Prabhupada said in Mayapur, they should sweep, first clean everything. And devotees asked, well, what about chanting japa? And Prabhupada said, first cleaning, after japing. In the name of japing, they're just wasting their time and talking all nonsense, which actually was quite prominent. When I first came to stay in India in 1977, I was surprised, shocked is maybe the better word. Devotees, instead of chanting japa and during the japa period, they mostly sit around and just crack jokes. That was at ISKCON Calcutta. I believe that was a great tradition started by Achyutananda and Garga Muni, especially Achyutananda. Good joker. But anyway, this cleanliness, good character. If there's a spiritual culture, it should reflect in our material life, in our ashram also. If there's garbage here and there, and we're so busy contemplating the mysteries of the Vedanta Sutras that we don't notice that there's garbage thrown here and there and everywhere. Or we talk in our lectures about the highest love of God, and we don't have any love for... all our love is for God, and for the devotees, we were so much in love with Krishna that we didn't have any love left for anyone else. But actually, if we have love for Krishna, then we have to love his devotees also. What's that verse? Arche, what is that? Arche, I'm getting mixed up this. Archaye eva haraye pujastah
cha shradhaye yate na cha bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakritasmita. Devotee on the lowest level, who is a materialistic devotee, he worships the Lord with great faith, but he has no interest in serving the devotees, hearing from the devotees. He doesn't have any regard for the devotees or anyone else. It's just me and Krishna, and forget everyone else. So, there should be... these are basic human qualities. Even atheists... Can I move it? Okay, I'll move also. Some of the claims of atheists in the modern atheistic movement is that, well, we don't need any religion to be moral. In fact, we can be more moral without religion, because religious people seem to be more immoral than we can be. We're just by humanism, we can be moral. So, these are basic human qualities. Srila Prabhupada pointed out that the animals of a country, they also deserve to be protected. Not that we're very concerned about the people of the country, but we're not concerned about the animals. So in this country, there are so many animals being slaughtered, but especially cow slaughter is a great blemish on a country where Parikshit Maharaj, we found there was a one bull being beaten, he was ready to kill that person. Nowadays, the governments themselves, they promote slaughterhouses, the state governments, at least. If one cow is killed in India, then even in 1 year or 10 years, that's a great, or anywhere in the world, but especially in India, that's a great blemish on the whole country. And what to speak of thousands being killed every day. This should be stopped. Otherwise, why this independence movement? What was the point of that independence movement? If in India they can't establish even that cow slaughter should be stopped, and what's the meaning of Mera Bharat Mahan? It means Mera Bharat Mahan Pap ke deshe. It's a greatly sinful. That's all. And it's more sinful, actually, in India. More sinful. In other countries, they don't know. They can't be blamed so much. But in this country, where it's known that cow slaughter is sinful, that should be stopped. The government should stop that. The people, they want to be government leaders, but they should know they get 1/6 of all these sinful reactions which are made by the people. And they're supporting and promoting sinful activity. So it's very dangerous to be a political leader in the present age. People, they're so anxious to become a political leader. You can see why. Well, because they can get so much money. Whatever good that's supposed to do them. But the sinful reactions they get are very, very serious. In Manu, it's stated that we come into this world alone, we leave alone. The only thing that goes with us is our reactions, karmic reactions, pious or sinful, both. So this is knowledge, but people are not interested in this knowledge. They've become atheistic. Even I was told yesterday in the Indian Army is an atheistic ethos. Then I wonder why they bothered about Pakistan. Why should they defend India? Why not just let Pakistan take it over? If it's Sarva Dharma Samabhav, all the religions are the same, and we don't really care for any religion, then let Pakistan take over. Well, what's the point? Why have so much endeavor to keep them out and spend so? Let them take over. Well, why defend India at all? Why bother? What's the point? Why do they defend India? Why should there be any point? We're all human beings, so if they want to be in charge, let them be in charge. They're all from the same genetic stock. Religion, so what? Doesn't matter, they're just their belief. So what are they defending India for? If they're all atheists and they don't care for Ganga, Yamuna, Krishna, Rama, Bhagavad Gita, then why? Why should they? Just on the base of nationalism, what is this nation? This nation was created by the British. As a political unit, this country was created by the British. So what's the great pride in that? The boundaries of countries, they change all the time. So there are so many contradictions. If you love India, then why not love the animals also? We love all the Indians. Well, we're not all of them. We don't like all the low caste people, and the Hindus don't like the Muslims, and the Hindus all different castes. There's no sane basis to any of all this. Why, if you love India, then why the streets are full of garbage and the air is all polluted and the country is sold out increasingly to multinational corporations, just like everyone else. The Ganga is dirty. The Narendra Modi's one of his in his constituency, who's elected in Varanasi, said we're going to clean up the Ganga. It's the first thing we're going to take up, and now they say it'll take 20 years to do. Typical politicians. Vishvaso naiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu cha. Srila Prabhupada often quoted from Chanakya Pandit that one should never trust a woman or a politician. At the time, the Prime Minister was Indira Gandhi, so she was doubly qualified or disqualified. If we understand the great spiritual heritage of India, that this land has the atmosphere, or has the background for helping everybody who comes here, even persons like myself who are not born in this lifetime in India, to achieve the ultimate goal of life, well, that's something which is worth promoting and preserving. But people at the present time are very confused, because on the one hand you have Mahatma Gandhi Ki Jai, and people still celebrate Janmashtami and Ram Navami, and Kumbh Mela is a huge thing, and on the other hand you have all this totally materialistic films. Bollywood is now the word. Bollywood is also known in the Western world. That is that India's great pride, and of course here there's the Telugu film industry, and there's the Tamil film industry. In Sri Lanka during the in their Tamil area during the rule of Prabhakaran, they didn't allow Indian films, Tamil films, because they wanted to preserve the culture. He wasn't particularly religious. He wasn't pro-Hindu or anything. He was pro-Tamil, but he didn't allow the... He kept the Indian Tamil culture up because it was very degraded. Now it's open, and you can see the culture is just going down immediately. So why should all these very low-class things be promoted to the masses? Bollywood means it's just very low class. And all the languages. Bengalis, they used to pride themselves on their high class. It was more cultural, their films. Serious drama. But now that's gone also now. Because there's more money in slapstick and vulgarity. So there's nothing to be proud of. And In this very low class culture, who are the greatest heroes or the biggest public icons of India in the last generation? that must be not here so much, but hugely popular in North India is Amitabh Bachchan. And the great hero all over India is Sachin Tendulkar. And what are their contributions? Just nonsense, both of them. Just complete nothing to uplift anyone in any way whatsoever. Just some phantasmagoria. And these are the great heroes. What other heroes are there? Aishwarya Rai. What's her contribution is that she has a good-looking body, or used to have. Of course, it's gone by the influence of time. So, in the history of India, we see that traditionally the people who are lauded, are great spiritual or religious, let's, I mean, let's say religious, or at least supposedly spiritual figures. Whether they're actually very spiritual or not may be disputed, but persons like Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, well, Sai Baba is very popular. Still, but not in the same class as, not in the same class of popularity as Sachin and Amitabh Bachchan. John Lennon of the Beatles said once that now we are more, talking about the Beatles, now we are more popular than Jesus. Which was probably true at the time, but the Beatles' popularity has waned and the popularity of Jesus goes on. In Britain, where the Beatles are from, the pop group, the Beatles, no one minded too much. In America, it was a big backlash against that statement. So, you can say to Indian people, they, Bharat Mata Ki Jai Ho. Oh, okay, all right, but what about this and what about that? What of... Someone says something? Translation is going, I see. But what is the actual... What is there actually of value of this country? What is... Is there any, there's actually nothing of any value in the material world, but if there is any value, it is the opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness. And that is the glory of India, that this country affords that opportunity by her ancient culture. That should be promoted, that we should be proud of, or you should be proud of, or whatever. But Indians become all excited when, for instance, this Amartya Sen got a Nobel Prize. They say, oh, wonderful, because the Westerners are patting him on the head for his contributions to their absolutely confused and exploitive worldwide economic culture, which no one can understand it very well, it seems, including the economists. Although they make theories about it, but very few of them were able to predict, for instance, the housing collapse in America a few years ago. If they'd actually been so expert, they should have been able to predict it. Actually, some of them did, but those who did, they either joined the people who are making lots of money, taking the opportunity of banking deregulation, which George Bush had quietly introduced, or they were not taken seriously. Cassandra. So, he was in Bengal especially. Oh, one of our Bengalis, they got a Nobel Prize. They got a pat on the head from these foolish demons. But meanwhile, the one person from India who's really done great good for the world, namely Srila Prabhupada, is hardly noticed. And this is a bit off topic, but it's increasingly within our own movement, within his own movement also, being sidelined. And in the name of spiritual culture, people are after Sai Baba, this cheetah, that cheetah, another cheetah. So one purpose of, there are so many points to make. One other is that there are many holy places, but they don't always seem very holy. if you go to Vrindavan, it's been, at least from the external point of view, it's been so much commercialized. And most of the holy places are like that. It's more gross in North India. But many places you go to, the pujaris are there and they don't seem to care very much about what they're doing. For them, it's just some way to pay the bills. They have their debts and their bills, their electricity bill, and this and that. They have to pay it. Well, the pujari is one way of doing it. So, one of the purposes of our Krishna Consciousness Movement is to revive India's culture. If we go through Srila Prabhupada's books, we'll find that he repeatedly speaks of this. In that book I compiled, The Message to the Youth of India, I've put in some of Srila Prabhupada's quotes in that regard. Srila Prabhupada said, I am the real patriot because I'm bringing the real glory of India to the world. Just a couple of quotes from Srila Prabhupada in this regard. Srila Prabhupada, one quote. It is a long process how Indians, especially educated Indians, have become victimized by the slowly deteriorating position of Indian culture. You'd think the educated people would be more intelligent, but they're the worst. They're the more educated means they're generally the ones who are furthest away from the original culture. But there is no use tracing out the history, but generally we have lost our own culture and our leaders are not very serious to revive our own culture to the point. We may say, well, the present government is, well, maybe in some ways, but the present government's main thrust is not reviving India's spiritual culture. They wouldn't have been elected if it was. The main thrust is expanding business and industry and increasing the Western style lifestyle of everyone, urbanization and all these things, building factories, having more business. That's why Narendra Modi, because the one slogan was Modi means business. That's one of the slogans. That's an English saying. If you say someone means business, you mean they're very serious. So it's a pun, play on words. It means he's very serious and very serious about promoting business, which means he's in cahoots with all these mega corrupt big businessmen. Directly or indirectly, the very big scale businessmen, they're corrupt. They may not be corrupt in the way just like you have to pay a government clerk 500 rupees for him to sign a piece of paper for you. They may not be corrupt in that petty way, but they may be that all the corruption they do is legal in forms of giving donations to the parties and all this kind of thing. But it works out the same. By money they influence, that's all. So, Prabhupada continues, still the mass of people not being very much advanced in education stick to the Indian culture. For example, lakhs of people still visit Jagannath Puri during the Rath Yatra festival. Lakhs still visit the Kumbh Mela. And lakhs still visit the holy places of India, but there is no encouragement by the leaders. It is only a continuation of the original culture. So there is no hopelessness, Srila Prabhupada wrote. This he wrote to Gaur Govinda Maharaj, an Indian disciple. If, of course, devotees are not Indian or non-Indian, but we're talking conventionally in this way. Srila Prabhupada wrote, if we revive Krishna consciousness in a systematic way, within a very short time we can revive our original Indian culture on the basis of the teachings of Lord Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita. So we have to work very hard for this purpose, and if you follow the path of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it will be very easily done. How about that? So we can tell all the people, if you want to be a patriotic Indian, then you should chant Hare Krishna and spread the Krishna Conscious Movement. And be cognizant of these things. Don't pollute the air. Don't pollute the water. don't promote a culture in which exploitation of women to the level of rape is considered normal. That education has to be there also. But it can be done. Srila Prabhupada says that if we work very hard to revive the original culture on the basis of the teachings of Lord Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita, following the path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that means spreading the holy names which are purifying and uplifting and spreading the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, then the original culture can be revived. So there's some endeavor here, some educational center to educate in all these matters, comprehensive training in all these matters, so that devotees can go out and teach these things to others. I doubt if in our movement there are many devotees who are even aware of this, that Srila Prabhupada wanted the original Indian culture to be revived on the basis of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and that's one of the purposes of Srila Prabhupada's teaching. I doubt if there are many who are aware of it. There is a whole movement in the West to de-Indianize everything. And within our movement, within India, there we have devotees, many are increasingly eager to start rock bands in the name of Krishna consciousness and all kinds of horrible things. I mean, rock music is horrible. It's definitely in the lowest modes of nature. It doesn't uplift the consciousness. So why, if one is in contact with this highest culture, should one want to go down to the lowest culture? It suggests you haven't really come in contact with the highest culture, only very superficially. Otherwise, why should one be attracted to such very low-class things? Fashion shows. At the opening of one of our temples, the only program for the public was a fashion show. I don't know. I just can't relate it to what Prabhupada lived for, what he taught, and then at his temple of girls having a fashion show. It's cognitive dissonance. Anyway, this is what this movement is meant for, to give Krishna consciousness, and that can be also said to be Indian culture, not in a mundane sense, but this the culture that has been practiced here since time immemorial has been meant for spiritual upliftment, which is why Krishna came here and Rama came here, Shankaracharya came here and revived the culture to a large extent. So this is what it's meant for. So we should, not just some theoretical learning of some philosophy, but to establish a whole culture. And gradually in these Varnashram projects, we should go toward all these kind of things. All kinds of things. I mean, even this tube well, this hand pump, we think that's very simple and this and that. That's not traditional culture. Regular well, yeah. Or you can either pull the water up, or you can, in Gujarat and some parts of Rajasthan, you have walk-in wells where you walk down. Instead of pulling the water up, the steps are made down to the water level. So you can... There's still some, but there are not many in use. Have you ever seen any in use? But there are still plenty of walk-in wells in the fields here and there in Gujarat, probably in the cities also. But they're mostly probably covered over in the cities. You also saw in Karnataka. They were in use at that time? You have walk-in wells, step down to them wells. And then one of the jobs of the kings is to build tanks here and there, so that also serves as reservoirs of water. So many things to revive. Making our own clothes. No sewn cloth. So many things. No cell phones. Oh, Not even landlines, actually, if we really want to revive everything. Okay, there's just a few thoughts. I've said these kind of things many times, but I feel necessary to say some of these things again and again and again. So, yeah, I think you were asking about, I was saying, books that I think it was that book, that Breaking India, that gives some perspective on very real issues in India today that affect the culture. This Breaking India addresses that or outlines it. And very few Indians, even the people who should be most aware of it, namely the leaders of the nation, they're not even aware of it. And sorry to say, maybe many of them wouldn't even care, because their main business in being a so-called leader of the nation is to fill their pockets up. They should all be shot. And that's not my saying. That was said by Gyani Zayal Singh. Is he still alive? No, died already. So I'm told by Dr. Nene, who's a Hindutva journalist come author living in Baroda. He told me once that he once approached, I'm not sure whether he was the president at the time, I think he was, approached Gyani Zayal Singh and said that he gave his outline of some plan for improving the nation or something like this. And he must have been the president at the time. So he said, no, that won't work. He said, no, that won't work. I'll tell you what actually is required if this country is going to make any progress. So he said that you take all the politicians, including myself, line them all up and shoot them all dead. So Dr. Nene said, I'll quote you on that. He said, you can if you like. I'll deny it. Shameless people. Shameless. But actually it wouldn't do any good, because there are plenty more waiting in line. It begins with education. You have to start by educating. It used to be in the schools that they taught the children to be good. I don't think they even do that. They don't even try to do that anymore now. It's just teach them how to get money, that's all. So, do they teach you to be good in your Swaminarayan school? Some idea, don't tell lies. How are you going to tell that to Patels? Most of the Swaminarayan followers are Patels, and they're all doing business. So in the school they'll teach them, don't tell lies. And then they'll go to the shop and they'll tell lies, because that's all part of doing business. It doesn't have to be, actually. But mostly it is. Doesn't have to be. There are some business people in India today who do what you might call clean business. Joshua Dinanda told me in Ahmedabad there's one travel agent who is very popular, because he'd give the quotation for the journey, how much it's costing. He said, this is how much the company charges, this is my margin, this is the final price. And he like this. So I guess it is possible in some spheres to do straightforward business, but it's not very easy. Especially with the whole way the world is now. That reminds me, although it's nothing really to do with this class or to do, well, it's Vaishya talk, I guess. Once in Dhaka in Bangladesh, I went to purchase paper for printing books, and the merchant, so the price was given. I said, well, make it less price. He said, I'm already selling it at a loss. And I said to him, there's a guy with a Muslim hat and a long beard and all this. I said, how can you be doing business at a loss? And he said, And he smiled and said that, well, by your saying that, I can understand you have no idea of business at all. So it can be. Sometimes you sell it because the price comes down and you just sell it, even though you're selling it at a loss, you want to move the stock and not keep. There's no possibility to sell it at a proper price. And sometimes you just have to take a loss. Anyway. Hare Krishna! Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Vande Mataram! Bharat Mata ki jai! Oh, none of you said jai. That was pretty good. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai! Alright, okay. Very good. By the way, one of our, I don't know if I should say this, one of our ISKCON gurus used to sing Vande Mataram, get all the people in the temple to sing it.